Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to World Weekly with me, Ben Hall. Donald Trump embarked on his first foreign trip as US president this week, with a visit to Saudi Arabia and Israel before heading on to Europe for a meeting with EU, NATO and G7 leaders. Saudi Arabia might seem an unconventional first stop for a US president, but Mr. Trump was intent on using it for an early win, resetting America's relations with the Sunni Arab world and re-emphasizing his antipathy towards Iran as the big threat to regional peace and stability. But how much has really changed in US policy towards the Middle East? With me to discuss this issue are Rula Khalaf, the FT's deputy editor here in the studio, Simeon Kerr down the line from Dubai, and John Reed from Jerusalem. Rula, how much has really changed in US policy towards the Middle East?
I think the fundamental shift that we saw play out over the past week is a realignment back to a pre-Obama years policy. And by that I mean the US has always been much closer to its traditional allies in the Gulf, the Sunni Arab states of the Gulf, and along with that, Egypt and Jordan. And although Obama did not fundamentally change this, the perception of the Obama White House was that it cared a lot more about building a certain relationship and reaching a detente with Iran. Of course, there was no detente with Iran. There was a nuclear agreement that was reached that worked, you know, for the world community as well as for Iran. But that deal was taken very badly in the Arab Gulf. And so by taking this first trip to Saudi Arabia, which is very unusual for a U.S. president, and by meeting more than 50 Sunni leaders there, I think Donald Trump made it very clear where his administration stands. And also, as Simeon will be talking about, I think, shortly, emboldened Saudi Arabia. And so in a way, he is shifting the balance of power in the region again towards the Sunni states.
Sim, is that how they see it in Saudi Arabia? And what substantially has changed in to the degree that Saudi Arabia can feel emboldened?
Well, they certainly were over the moon with the whole visit. The statements of President Trump were lockstep with theirs in terms of their view of Iran and its role in the region. And yeah, they have, there's a sense that the Gulf Arab states are now, you know, taking this message from Trump and trying to act on it. So the example would be in Bahrain, we saw very violent scenes as the security forces went into a village to break up a protest around the most senior cleric in the country. That's a huge uptick in violence there, and certainly indicates an emboldenment there, and it's all very much backed up by Saudi Arabia. We've seen a similar campaign from Saudi Arabia and UAE against Qatar, who they often think has supported too much Islamic extremism in the region. So those two incidents highlight the fact that they do feel emboldened. But once again, there seems very little they can do in say, for example, the key conflict regions such as Syria and Libya and Yemen. They're still bogged down there. What they hope to do is that they want to have this Islamic military alliance, which they were discussing with Trump there, 50 Sunni, largely Sunni leaders there, all getting together, trying to create a blueprint for coordinated action in these conflicts, particularly Libya, perhaps Syria. The trouble is there was no detail there. Many of the delegates there were thinking, well, you know, we're just here for confidence building. We're not ready to sign up to the so-called Muslim NATO yet. So they see, you know, he still faces, the Sunni Gulf states still face a lot of constraints.
I think, Sim, if you go back to the Yemen campaign, these sort of symbolic statements and symbolic meetings, when it's crunch time, they don't really tend to materialize into support. I mean, I'm thinking of when the Saudis announced, I don't know, 16 or 17 countries joining them in the battle, in their campaign in Yemen. And we heard, you know, the Pakistani saying, no, not us. And then, you know, other even Arab states saying, no, we won't be joining. So there's always a lot more noise than action in these things, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Pakistanis, there was no way with a significant Shia minority that they would consider getting involved in a war that would and has ended up being seen along those sectarian lines. But I think what the Sunni Gulf states are saying is they're saying we can form different coalitions for different problem regions, like in Libya. Maybe, you know, they would obviously want to get behind Egypt, even if they fail to get any support from, say, for example, Qatar. And in Syria, they're talking a lot about it, but they really face problems trying to come up with a coordinated response there.
John, Donald Trump's criticism of Iran, strident criticism of Iran, would have been music to the ears of the Israeli government. But he also seemed to portray this as an opportunity to bring the Arab world, Sunni Arab world, and Israel a little bit closer together, you know, united against a common enemy, possibly with a view to sort of improving the prospects of what he described as the ultimate peace deal. But frankly, they didn't get any closer, did they?
They didn't get any closer, and he gave very, very little away here. We're not much closer to understanding how he's going to relaunch the peace process, what it's going to look like, you know, what his ideas are for getting some kind of resolution here on the ground. You're right, he did bring up Iran. He did speak about it as the region's foremost enemy. It was absolutely an Israeli talking point. And the subtext here is that Israel has been working with the Gulf Arab countries behind the scenes, cooperating with them more and more closely in defense and cybersecurity, although they're still officially sworn enemies and have no relations. The way this constellation would work or would affect the peace process, if it is indeed relaunched, I think the Israeli magical thinking around this is that the Egyptians, the Saudis, and so on will lean on the Palestinians to accept concessions of the kind that they weren't willing to do before, perhaps including something that would fall short of a Palestinian state. So it's all very interesting. His speech that he gave in Jerusalem at the Israel Museum, it was billed as the highlight of his visit, was actually extremely short on details. So again, we don't really know what he's planning. He did send his envoy, Jason Greenblatt, his main envoy for Israeli-Palestinian talks, back to the region today. We're talking on Thursday now. So they're clearly up to something.
Rula, how long can this new mood of optimism and warmth in relations between the US and the Sunni Arab world last if America sticks with the nuclear deal with Iran?
I think the nuclear deal is not so much the issue right now. I think that most of the countries have, in fact, and even Israel, have in fact advised the Trump administration not to tear the deal apart. Where they want to see a lot stronger action is in the meddling that they see from Iran in Iraq, in Lebanon, in Syria. And I think, you know, in Iraq, for example, the Americans and the Iranians are on the same side. And the biggest fear of the Iraqis is if there's tension in growing tension in this relationship, that the Americans and the Iranians will start fighting each other on Iraqi soil. And we saw that after the American-led invasion of Iraq. So now they're fighting on the same side. And as long as there's sort of ISIS as the common enemy, they will, I think, continue to be on the same side. I think one has to look at what happens after ISIS is driven out of Mosul, and I think that will be pretty soon. in Syria, they are on opposite sides. And I think the demands of the Americans when they're talking to the Russians is, we'll cooperate with you against ISIS, but we want you to commit to the removal or the withdrawal of Iranian-backed militias. So I think there will be a problem in Syria. You could potentially get more of an escalation in Syria. So these aren't issues that are easily addressed when it comes to the region. I think Donald Trump has taken a very broad and simplified view of the Middle East. And I think he will soon find out that words and rhetoric do have an impact on the ground, not least in inflaming sectarian passions.
Okay, that's it for this week. My thanks to Rula Khalaf, Simeon Kerr and John Reed. World Weekly is produced by Hannah Murphy. Until next week, goodbye.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Here at Bellingcat, we get to the bottom of things. From a global crisis to an underreported event, we find the facts using publicly available tools and resources, uncovering what is hidden on and below the surface. We connect the dots using social media posts, satellite images, and public records, and empower others to do the same by sharing how we do it. The ability to do so is only made possible by our readers, supporters, and community members. Care to join us? Learn how at bellingcat.com.